702 ABC Sydney, ABC Local Radio, New South Wales. And our next guest is Peter Short. He was diagnosed with esophageal cancer 5 years ago and made a full recovery, or so he thought. But on January the 28th this year, on his 57th birthday, he was told it had returned, and this time it was terminal, and he was given a prognosis of just 5 months to live. Peter says it's clear he will die within months, but he wants to select the time that he dies. However, he does say that he believes that people who want to hold on until the very end, whatever suffering that entails, have that right as well. Both paths are dignified. What is undignified in his eyes is not having the choice. Now, at the peak of his business career, he was in charge of Coles Fuel and Convenience Division with an annual turnover of $7 billion. And also in charge of over 5,000 staff. So he's used to getting results. He's used to getting things done. Here's a little bit of a documentary that they're making about Peter's life and achievements. And they're still doing that, as a matter of fact, while we're talking.
When I set out as an 18-year-old, I could have never dreamed that I could have done, achieved, worked with and met so many interesting people, done so many interesting things. I want to choose to have a magnificent ending to my life because I've had a magnificent life and I don't want to drip out at the end of a morphine tube.
I'm Peter Short, 57. I've probably got about 3 or 4 months to live. I'm a very strong advocate for choice at end of life.
People like Peter are pure gold because not many people are prepared to put themselves and their illness out in the public domain.
Now that I'm in a situation where I am facing a short time span, you do get more out of every little thing, knowing that you're not going to be around here for so long. This could go anywhere and get quite complicated, but I don't go into things to lose, and I intend to get some sort of a result out of this.
Peter joins us in our Melbourne studio along with Dr. Rodney Syme. Good to have you both here.
Thank you.
What's the quest, Peter? You're on a life and death mission, really, aren't you?
Yeah, it's certainly become that. At the moment, the sort of quick backstory is I was given 9 months to live in February this year. Going by that, it's now in the 10th month, so I've outlived my expectation in terms of when the cancer would take over or take control. But I had scans a couple of weeks ago, and they show that it's coming on with a reasonable vengeance. And so now I'm looking at somewhere between 45 and 90 days left. I'm in day 18 of that 90 days. It sounds a bit cute talking about it in days, but it is a reality. And what that does to me is really puts the momentum up in terms of trying to achieve as much on freeing up the Australian population to have a conversation around what I call dying with dignity, which is about people having choice for a medically assisted death if they are terminally ill or intolerably suffering, with a set of stringent rules around it. And that is all encompassed in a draft exposure bill that Melbourne Senator Richard Di Natale has tabled and has gone through a Senate committee.
Dr. Rodney Syme is with you as well. Rodney, do other countries have these sorts of legislations already drafted and in operation? Because surely we don't need to reinvent the wheel if that's the case.
No, indeed. Legislation is already passed in the Netherlands, in Belgium, in Luxembourg, in Switzerland, in the states of Oregon, Washington, Vermont, and a bill has just been passed in New Jersey. So there is a continuous wave of legislation being passed, and it all comes on the back, obviously, of successful legislation. When legislation for this sort of a contentious subject is brought in, everybody argues about how it will work. They say this and that will go wrong, it'll be dreadful, it'll be disastrous. But what you find is that it works. And so as it works in one country, another country says, yes, this is very reasonable, this can be controlled. Unfortunately, parliaments in Australia have just 17 attempts have been made for private members' bills in state government, state parliaments, and none of them have been successful. I think that's why Richard Di Natale has seen this. Maybe a federal initiative would be successful, and that's where it's going to go over the next 12 months or so.
Now, the question, I guess, that I have to ask is that you've now had more time than you were expected to have, Peter. You've lived longer, more time with family and friends. So people may fear that if the drugs were available too soon, that you could be robbed of that time. Is that a fair assumption or not?
It's a fair question, but it's an incorrect assumption. So I think... from my point of view, there is no way I want to miss a second of the future that I have. And if this goes on for another 2 years, I'll be there enjoying every moment of it. What it is about is having the knowledge that when you do reach a stage where you are an intolerably suffering, and you know, let me spell out my situation. I've got esophageal cancer metastasized into my lungs. You can hear that I have a bit of trouble breathing. Eventually, I will probably have a situation where to get out of bed and move to the toilet will be a very difficult process because of lack of oxygen. At that stage, I will also probably be contemplating, do I take drugs to alleviate a variety of symptoms that might come up? The question becomes, at that stage, do I want to live in a semi-conscious land of great suffering, both mentally and possibly physically, for another week or so? Or do I want to take the opportunity to have a farewell that's structured, fun, with my family, where we can look at each other in the eye, hug and kiss and cry, can have my dog's ear in my hand, and I can go out, as I say, in a magnificent way, rather than, maybe I get a call, my wife gets a call at 3 o'clock in the morning after having been by my bedside for a week to say, sorry, you missed it, but he just passed away.
Rodney, can Peter have that? Is that achievable?
It certainly is achievable. Somebody in Peter's situation with a limited amount of time available, he doesn't want that time to be consumed by what I call a toxic anxiety of wondering what the hell's going to happen to me, you know, who's going to be in control at the end. As he just indicated, he doesn't want somebody else to be controlling the medications that he gets and the way that he dies. And if I could sum up what Peter wants, I think he wants to go with a bang, not with a whimper. And that's possible. If you give somebody control over the end of their life, what you do is you relieve that toxic anxiety. It opens up a space. The space that's left is incredibly important. Peter's got a short time to live, and he wants to make the most of that. You can tell that. He's marvelously courageous. His approach to this is mature. And so he deserves, everybody deserves, to have that control. They may not ever use it, but to have it is one of the most powerful palliative things that a doctor can do for his patient. And that means giving that person support, giving them knowledge, and if necessary, giving them medication, which they will be able to use to control the end of their life when they choose, if they choose to do so.
We're speaking with Peter Short, who is suffering from a terminal illness and wants to choose when and where and how. Also, Dr. Rodney Syme. Rodney, if you did help Peter achieve this, what could be the ramifications under the current legislation?
Well, that's a very interesting question. It's always been assumed that if a doctor were to give a person like Peter medication which they would use to end their own life, that would be a criminal offence. It would be aiding and abetting suicide. But that's never been clearly defined in legal terms. Nobody's ever been charged. No doctors have ever been charged under that law. I argue that providing somebody like Peter with medication, advice and support is palliation. It's not a criminal thing. It's good palliation. It's good medical care. And that's what I intend to provide Peter with if he needs it. I've come out recently and indicated that I did exactly this with a wonderful man called Steve Guest way back in 2005. I'm certainly prepared to provide the same form of treatment for Peter if he should need it. And in that sense, I'm challenging what and how the law is interpreted. Is it a criminal offence to provide good palliation for somebody? You know, in palliative care, dying people are regularly put to sleep with medication slowly, put into a deep sleep, kept in a deep sleep until they actually die. It's a process which eliminates suffering, but it can be very harsh on family. Doesn't allow the sort of humane, warm farewell that families can make and would want to make. If it's possible to put somebody in a deep coma, keep them in a coma until they die, and that's considered legal, I can't see why it shouldn't also be legal for a person to be given medication which they could take, and instead of taking 5 or 7 days to die in a coma, they could die in 15 minutes, peacefully, with their family around them, sharing in that death. But it leaves behind the most fantastic, warm memories for the family, and diminishes the grief and suffering which follows somebody's death.
Peter, you want to change the law. You haven't got much time to do it. You said that meeting someone who might be able to move things along was harder than meeting Santa Claus at this time of year. And Santa's very busy at this time of year. How are you going with that?
So I think we've sort of discussed some of the reasons why choice at end of life should be available. I think you then move to the fundamental question is, why isn't it? And the reasons are not very strong. 80% of Australians, no matter how you slice and dice them, support choice at end of life. Yet because the political process doesn't necessarily represent the people on all things, you end up in this strange situation where the people are crying out for legislative change and the governments are refusing to even have the conversation. So because my current stance is I believe if you look me in the eye as a person who is dying, I can convey an honest message in a professional way that the Prime Minister needs to hear. He is the leader of this country. It is not up to him to say, I don't believe in choice at end of life, therefore no one can talk about it. He needs to free up the cabinet so that the Liberals can talk about it, the country can talk about it. I've been given all sorts of crossed messages in terms of from different senators as to what the position of the government is, and you know, I've got letters that completely contradict each other. So because I'm now up against such a tight time frame, I'm trying in a respectful, humorous, but very serious way to attract the Prime Minister's attention, because I've done a lot in my life that has contributed to this country, but I think this could be the best thing I could ever do in my life for untold people in the future. And I say that not to be a smart aleck or a hero. I say it because I've been living this for 9 months. And as Rodney talks about, it's not the last week that matters in this story. It's the 9 months of incredible joy and richness and texture that I've had in my life on the way through, because I'm not worrying about what happens at the end. So I believe, actually, Tony Abbott's in Melbourne this afternoon for a bit of an intimate lunch. I don't live far from the city. Maybe I'll get a call today. But I do know that Senator Josh Frydenberg's office has been working hard to try and line something up. So I'm not giving up, but God, it's wearing me out.
Shame you have to use literally your last breath to do this for people in your situation, Peter. But as you say, you've got to keep the humour. And yesterday you recorded a song. I don't know if it's going to go to the top. It's probably as annoying as that down, down, prices are down song that they produced when you were running some of the show at Coles. But it's not bad. I've got a bit of it now. It's called TikTok Killer Clock. We'll go out on that note, which is a song to the power brokers to change the law.
Could I also just mention, if people want to support me and this concept, petershort.com.au is my blog, and there's a connection to the petition there. So if they go to petershort.com.au, you know, they can make a difference at an individual level.
And if you have a view on this, we'd love to hear from you. 1-300-925-222 is our number, 1-300-925-222. Peter, just introduce this song for us. It's destined to be a hit.
Okay, so this is Prime Minister, please meet with me. Don't put me down, down.
Tick-tock, tick-tock, dying to a killer clock. Tick-tock, tick-tock, dying to a killer clock. Dear Mr. Prime Minister, I know you know I'm here and the days are dying with me. I'm going down, down, staying down. And the people of our towns need me to meet you now, now, now. Free up the liberals, free up the vote. Make a decision, be a great bloke, and let's meet to move forward. You need our support, and I need yours, but time is short, and so am I. Free up the vote. Free up the liberals. Free up the vote. I'm going down, down, staying down. And we need change. Right now. Tick-tock, tick-tock, dying to a killer clock. Tick-tock, tick-tock, dying to a killer clock. Tick-tock, tick-tock, dying to a killer clock.
It's a cold finish, all right, isn't it? That always catches the radio announcers. But there it is, its first ever airplay right across New South Wales, and at 7:02 ABC Sydney. Peter, so you've made it to the big time as a musician. We didn't get to your bass solo. I know you were just about to launch into a sensational bass solo, but anyway, hopefully the message gets through. Look, thanks for talking to us, Peter Short, and thanks for talking to us, Dr. Rodney Syme.
And thanks for such a great conversation.
Thank you.